Everybody, and welcome back to your favorite G.I. Joe podcast show. But there's no time to lose because this is a lot of stuff we're going to try to cover today here on Knowing is Half the Podcast. I am Ray Stakanis.
I am the one that screwed you all. Yes, I thought this was a great idea, and maybe it will be, and maybe not. We'll see.
Here's the thing. I like that you suggested it and then did not watch.
The idea was like we would all bring our favorite Treehouse of Terror episodes
because
they're
horror.
Iconic, classic.
Wow, can't even get the Treehouse name of the thing
horror,
right.
Really?
Yeah, Treehouse of Horror.
Yeah,
I've been calling that. Treehouse of Terror for years.
Oh hell no! Get out of here! You're fired.
It's alliterative. How would you? Why would you do that? It's
you
ridiculous.
You are fired.
And I was like, okay, like everybody knows these episodes. So like, we can just like, hey, remember that one time that one thing happened? And everybody who's listening will be like, yes, I remember that. That's fantastic. So I was like, okay, cool. Yeah. So like, I mean, I'm doing like the second episode, the second Treehouse. Gina's doing the sixth. And Ray is like, fuck y'all. I'm going to go with a terrible one that no one has watched. And so... yeah, we'll
Man,
see how this goes.
22 whole minutes, Chan. It's like what you would normally do to record an episode of this show, except that was higher quality than what you normally would be watching.
I would argue that Treehouse 25 is it's there.
It was solid.
You know what? I hadn't seen it, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I had okay. I you know, at some point I stopped watching The Simpsons, not because it the quality declined, just because there had been so much of it. And this was a real good one. 25 was a real good one. I hadn't seen it, enjoyed it thoroughly.
All right then.
I mean, sounds good. So guys, today we're going to watch three episodes, dear Lord, of Treehouse of Horror, and that as
which
Chan
is
just
three
said,
three episodes. Each one has three vignettes in it. It's
each is a triptych.
Yeah, which also, by the way, as someone who wrote on an 11-minute show, kudos to them for cramming three stories into 21 minutes. That are all fantastic, because that is hard.
That is hard. Well, we're watching Treehouse of Horror 2, which is Chan's idea. Treehouse of Horror 6, which is Gina's idea. And then Treehouse of Horror 25, because it looked interesting. And I don't have a favorite Treehouse. Like, I guess there was one I remember of the alien and how to feed 440 humans, that whole deal.
Yeah, to serve man. Also, right. You're just great the guy. Worst, Ray. You're just the worst.
Yeah.
How are you going to be a grown-ass man you don't have a favorite Treehouse of Horror?
Yeah, that's terrible.
I just told you, the one with that alien, and it's the only one I remember. Because, I watched a lot of Simpsons first and second season. I think we all did. Back in, 89 and 90. And then you watch it here and there as you kind of go along, and every time you see a clip, you're like, oh, yeah, that is still pretty good. And here we are 30 years later, and it's still a thing, and they're still just, like, going. Who knows how long this show is going to be going for. And every time I see it, it's like, yeah, that's generally enjoyable, but I don't seek it out. You know, I know that they put what was the big deal with the apps, and the one app had like all the Simpsons. It's like, who's just sitting out and watching all the Simpsons? That just seems like too much. I don't know.
I feel like we can name a half dozen people off the top of our heads.
Yeah.
Who do
Maybe
that.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. We know a lot of people and that have a lot of free
to be
time.
Fair. Yeah, we're in a town full of comedy people,
also
full of television writing people, and like that's one of those like seminal works, you know, that is like one of the pillars of modern comedy. So, you know,
I mean, I was joking because I bought a season of The Walking Dead because I'd like to get into it and kind of catch up and finish the series now that I know it's kind of ending. So I bought season 7 on Amazon streaming for like $20, and I bought it like. Gina, the typing, dear Lord. God damn it. There's bongo drums in my ears. Anyway.
Do you not have your mic on, Gina?
I do.
Are you pointing it at your keyboard?
No, this I also, don't know why it's so loud.
My point
this may
is,
also be raised misophonia because I cannot hear it.
Oh, yeah. No, it's,
I mean, I'm shocked that he could hear it. It's not even near my mic.
In my mind, guys at home, tell me, hashtag Ray is hearing things, but I was correct. Or B, Gina typing loud, hashtag.
Or how about this one? Hashtag I'm cutting this all out.
Oh, no, this is not going to be in the show. So my point is, I have not watched a single episode of this Walking Dead because I just haven't been able to find the time. How do people find the time to watch every episode of The Simpsons, which is like, what, 500 episodes at this point? Dear Lord.
We're better at time management than you are. Other human beings are better at time management than you are.
Or
we're north of 600, by the way.
They don't have kids. I would say a part of one, part of the other. Probably both. Probably both. Probably both. Definitely both. Anyway, let's talk about Tree Horse of Terror.
Yep. Tree Horse.
Tree Horse of Terror. Jan, this was your selection. Now, what is your story with this particular episode? Like, why is it your favorite before we go into breaking it down?
I mean, rewatching it again, I love like how, because we're like right at the beginning. So like all of these sort of things that we sort of take for granted, are just like sort of initiating here. But what it really comes down to is my favorite line in television, any television show, comedy, drama, action, whatever, any joke, it is the single joke. And it's from the first segment of the show, which is the Monkey Paw episode, which already has a ton of great gags in it, but we'll get to it, but like it is my favorite line of all time, and I love it so much. And so like just from there, you know, it would just indelibly buried itself in my brain back when I saw it, you know, in 1991. Was it season three?
Probably 91, yeah, somewhere in that zone.
Season two.
The thing I remember most about this episode way back in the day was we had just read The Monkey's Paw in my English class like a month before this came out. So this was like hard fresh in my mind when it came out. I was like, I understood that reference. It was just a delight. So this thing opens with Marge giving a speech like she's at a high school play. And she steps from behind the curtain to basically say, hey, this is going to be real violent and real gross in many ways. So it's not a normal episode of The Simpsons. We warned you last year we would do this and still got angry letters. You're probably not going to listen to me again, but I'm still trying. And I was like, you know what? That's a good bit. I like that.
Yeah, I love it because they started it with the very first Treehouse of Horror, Marge coming out. And this was at a time when parents were more involved in their kids' lives than they are now, before there were tablets and phones
no
and
internet.
Things like that. No internet. Exactly. So, and parents used to write angry letters into pretty much every show. Especially like anything on Disney they would write. But The Simpsons got a lot of angry letters because people thought that Bart was a bad influence and all of that stuff. So I love that they just tackled it head on and made Marge sort of come out and give a warning, but then sort of make fun of her every year for giving the warning. It's a good bit while also telling those parents, oh, you know, like if you want to turn it off and not let your kid watch it, do that.
Real talk here. As a parent whose kid is just starting to repeat everything that is said. So now we're having to curtail all the fucks and shits because, you know, we're starting to hear that thing where you're like driving and you just hear out of the back seat like, you motherfucker.
Oh, God.
Got it. Can't do that anymore in front of him. You could do it when he didn't understand English, but now that he's putting those syllables together, not a good thing to repeat. And I'm dreading, you know, like 5 years from now when he will watch something, you know, like Bart being shitty and then just be shitty, because that's all it is. Like parents, like, they don't give a shit about morality or whatever like that. They're just like, I don't want my kid to fucking call me an asshole and punch me in the dick.
The people,
you know,
writing letters are the morality people.
Oh, those people go to hell.
Oh, no, that's effective. Yeah, I will say right now, the late 80s.
The letters are absolutely those people. Because when I was a kid, I watched The Simpsons. And first of all, I would not like repeat stuff. But if I did, my parents would just be like, well, you're not watching that anymore. Like, it's not. But the people that actually take the time to write the letters are the people who they parody on The Simpsons using Maude Flanders and Reverend Lovejoy's wife when she says, "Will somebody please think of the children?" It's the pearl clutchers who think, you know, seeing a kid be bratty on TV is a sin.
Well, I see the late 80s and early 90s were like the real, like, hardcore, in my mind, at least for as far as television monitoring goes, because they used to put op-eds in the newspaper. I used to read them all the time, like every day. It felt like there was another one about the violence or whatever. And one of my favorite things I remember reading back in the day was an article that was just like, here are the most violent shows on television. And one of them was like Married with Children or like something that's like, I'm looking at it like, no, I watched that show. That's not a really... But it turned out that their methodology, and let's see how scientific it was, they picked one random episode of the show and then just counted up the number of violent acts or what they considered to be violent acts in the show. And if I remember correctly, that episode of Married with Children had a boxing match in it. So they counted every punch of the boxing match. So I'm like, why are there 97 violent acts in a half hour of Married with Children? Oh, well, if you count a boxing match happening in the background, then yes. But that's stupid.
To be fair, as someone who grew up and watched Married with Children with my parents, because we used to watch pretty much everything together, at least up until a certain age, that is not a show kids should watch. Now rewatching it, it's a lot of sexist stereotypes. I thought it was hilarious, but I would either not let a kid watch it, or I would say, like, okay, now this is, it's funny, but it's bad.
Yeah. Well, you can see now how a lot of shows similar to that would damage you come as you come of age.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I watched that with we watched Simpsons together. We watched In Living Color together. So, you know, most of the stuff, at least my parents were watching it with us. So it wasn't. Yeah. The simpler times, man. No internet, nothing. Yeah,
my parents simpler didn't times. Watch anything with me. Because everything I wanted to watch, I knew they wouldn't like, so I would just not watch it in my room or whatever.
That explains a lot. I did not have a TV in my room, Mr. Rich Von Richardson.
No, you know what? When
she had a full live cast reenacting sitcoms for her.
Yeah,
because she
had
a queen
stage
in Boonton Township.
I asked my parents for TV and cable when I was like 12 or 13. And I was just like, that's what
12
you want
or 13. Okay. I mean, I had one in my room when I was like, I think when I was 15 or 16.
There you go.
But I'm talking about kid. You're talking about like teenager, preteen.
12 is kid. You know, I don't know. Like
12
see you in court, Gina.
Ray, learn your terminology if you're going to work in TV, sir.
I'm going to work in TV at this point.
Here's a handy mnemonic, Ray, for telling what's a teen or a preteen. If there's a teen in the number, they're teens. If there's no teen, like 11 or 12, that's a preteen.
Yeah.
There you go.
I'm learning a lot today, guys.
Right there.
Sometimes they're called tweens. 12 is considered tween nowadays.
Let's not make it too difficult on the minority.
What is this Legion season one all over again? What's happening?
Yeah, yeah. So this was the first. This was the second Treehouse of Horror that they ever did, because they didn't have on the first season. But this was the first one where they did the funny names at the beginning of all the writers and everything. And apparently, they said that it got to be such a pain in the ass to write them that one season they stopped, and there was such an outcry from people who love them that they went back to doing it. So there's one season, I forget what season it is. I think it's like 16 or something, where the writers were just like, oh, for fuck's sake, we've been doing this for so long. There are no more puns for the same people's names. And they stopped. But this time they start out with the uh, with you know, you get double the bit because there's also names on gravestones. And the first one they have is Bambi's mom, which is very sad. They also have Cajun Cooking, which apparently is dead or
that was hilarious
dead.
In 1991.
Yeah, I thought they were I thought these were all good bits. This is the best part about Treehouse of Horror is every frame. I've seen them so much now that every frame has something going on, whether or not you spot it, even if it's very fast. And these opening sequences are chock full of that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they had like a through line where they all. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, my idea for this was that we wouldn't do like the intense recap. We would because.
Oh, all right. Each I mean, segment I took would have very about 20 minutes on all like, of these.
Yeah, we'll just sort of like hit the high points in like each segment, and then like we can talk about what we are interested in, but we don't have to like you know like hit everything.
I just have fun trivia for a bunch of things.
Yeah, 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 perfect.
Normally, I take pretty detailed notes about like this happened, then this happened in order, and here I just put Monkey's Paw. Hey, Lisa's in Morocco.
I feel like we've all seen these enough that I could recite each of these episodes, but I just have fun little trivia things for things.
Yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, let's bring it up. Sure, so the through line is that all the kids eat, everybody eats candy, and they make a joke like, well, we won't all have nightmares for eating too much candy. Cut to, of course, everyone having nightmares. So we start with Lisa.
I love that that's just like meta humor, like, you know, like it was like a seminal thing for like talking about the thing that you're actually doing. And, you know, it was still like a fresh, fun thing to do back then.
Yeah. Yeah, there's these Treehouse of Horror episodes are chock full of meta humor, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, so I mean, let's talk about this Monkey's Paw episode here. Again, I had just learned about Monkey's Paw.
This is Lisa's nightmare. She's the first one to have a nightmare, and this is her nightmare is Monkey's Paw.
I love the gag with the the stall over there, it's gone. It's just like, oh no, he's right over there.
Yeah, yeah. There's my first, like, that moment is great. My first favorite line is when Marge just goes, there's something I don't like about that severed hand. And the delivery is just perfect. It's said with no self-awareness or irony that she's talking about a severed hand. It's just a concerned mom, as if she was saying, oh, there's something I don't like about that boy from school, but this time she's talking about a severed hand.
I know it. So they end up taking it home from Morocco.
The Maggie's pacifier bit was great.
Yeah, Maggie makes a wish,
great build up,
and it's a pacifier, and
the
then
limo comes and all of this, and yeah,
and then the second wish is Bart wishes for them to be famous. And this is the most tongue-in-cheek meta because the Simpsons get rich and famous, and then there's Simpsons merch everywhere. And this was a season of the Simpsons when it was truly like you went to the Jersey Shore and every other stall had Simpsons t-shirts. And there's a character in this that's like, $18 for this t-shirt. That's ridiculous. And they're making CDs, which they were actually doing. And everyone just hates it.
Who here bought the Simpsons Sing the Blues? The Simpsons Sing the Blues, not like a soundtrack or like, you know, like here's a bunch of comedy songs. Here is the Simpsons, these cartoon characters singing blues songs on cassette.
Yeah.
Because I may have bought that.
I had several Simpsons CDs, and they have a ridiculous, but not much more ridiculous than Simpsons Sing the Blues. They have like an island songs or whatever it is. And
Aloha Simpsons.
It's truly, and you know that because the writers have no say in merch, you know that they don't get your opinion as a showrunner or as a writer about merch on your show. It's just shit that Fox was like shelling out everywhere, and they slap those faces on everything. So this was the writer's opportunity to have people in town be like, oh, at first they were cute, but now they're obnoxious. And I love it.
Also, what's real fun is to look back to 1991 where they're saying $18 for a t-shirt. What a ripoff. I'm like,
You know what? That is expensive. I even thought, like, when they said $18, I was like, man, in 1991, $18 is freaking expensive. But then, you know, that's probably what those were. I also had
$25 a shirt now, standard.
What is it?
You know, when we have a sale in our store, okay. It's only $13 for one of the new Knowing is Half the Podcast seasons 1, 2, 3, and 4 t-shirts now available.
Seamless.
Go
plug,
to our Knowing is Half the Podcast store.
I used to like this podcast. Notes. Now they're annoying.
Yeah, this was, I enjoyed this. I enjoyed everyone being over the Simpsons.
And then, Lisa wishes for world peace, which is great. They're freaking, singing songs and, making a huge hands across America into a huge peace sign. And then we pull back to get the first Kang and Kodos laugh. That went on for too long.
Yep.
And when I saw that, I lost my mind. And you can still, you can see the result of it today. I still love huge, long cartoon laughs. And I force you people to listen to them every time I run across them in cartoons.
By the way, they 100% did this because the episode was short. They had two opportunities for laughs, and they said that we're a couple seconds under, so they extended this laugh. And this is the second appearance of the aliens, because it's the second Treehouse of Horror, and they've appeared in every single one. So sometimes it's just a little bit of voice work. Sometimes it's, you know, there was one season where just at the very end, they're like, I can't believe they didn't invite us to do the Halloween show this year. Well, maybe is the phone working? Pick it up. You know, like, so they have appeared in every one, and I love them so much.
Great. I like the fact that they show up with like a stick. And just because they have the one weapon in the world, a stick, now they take over the entire world and enslave the world, which made me laugh.
And that leads to my favorite line in all of television,
yes. Go ahead.
Which is when Flanders gets the paw and says, I wish these, you know, aliens were gone. Kang goes running after Mo, saying, kneel before my slingshot, puny earthling. And then, yeah, after the paw goes, then it just comes right back in the other direction, like full on Scooby-Doo physics with Mo chasing him. And he goes, he's got a board with a nail in it. And fucking board with a nail in it is so just the most epic juxtaposition joke. we do ID4, but instead of fucking viruses or atomic bombs, it's fucking board with a nail in it. And yeah, that was just, that just made my life.
Oh, I see.
It
I
also
thought
explained
and then they're like, oh, someday, you know, like they'll destroy themselves, they'll build a bigger board with a bigger nail, and it's just so great. And even, and there's a line in there from the aliens where they say, your superior intellect is no match for our puny weapons. And that gets me every freaking time. Also, side note, Homer wishes for a turkey sandwich, which is totally what I would wish for.
Oh yeah. Except would it's
you
dry.
Would you remember? Would you remember to have mayo?
Oh, you know what? I feel like on a scale of 1 to 10, that was probably a 7 turkey sandwich, because he's going through it and he says, turkey's a little dry. Oh, turkey's a little dry. And you know what? Turkey's kind of dry. I feel like it was still probably a pretty good sandwich, and at least it didn't kill him like, you know, other monkey's paw-esque things in the past. So I consider that a win.
If you get a magic wish, you want a 10 out of 10 on your turkey sandwich. Anything less is a fucking disappointment.
But I feel like at that point, if you're just trying to avoid a monkey's paw-esque punishments, you know, a slightly dry turkey sandwich isn't that bad.
I mean, as it all goes. But it was that was a low-risk, low-reward kind of a wish.
Yeah.
So Flanders gets the paw. He makes the aliens go away, then gives himself a castle. And Homer hilariously says, I wish I had a monkey's paw.
Yeah, it's great.
That one
it's
got
great.
Me.
And
that
then and me. Then Lisa wakes up from the nightmare, and then it's time for Bart's nightmare.
Which is the Twilight Zone.
Yeah,
it's a redo of the Twilight Zone episode with Billy Mumy.
So this is a fun little fact. So first of all, almost every Treehouse of Horror has some sort of Twilight Zone reference, understandable. And even the Monkey's Paw, there was a Twilight Zone episode that was based on the Monkey's Paw thing. So that was sort of Twilight Zone-esque, but this one is full on. It's called It's a Good Life. And when that episode of The Twilight Zone with Billy Mummy was made into a movie. They redid a bunch of the more famous episodes of The Twilight Zone, and that was one of the ones that they remade with, really? You know, a new actor. And
Have you not seen The Twilight Zone movie?
I've not seen this episode of Twilight Zone either. I didn't even know this was an episode of Twilight Zone. It makes sense in hindsight that of course it is.
Ray, but, what the hell is wrong with you?
Again, who has time to watch every show in existence?
I'm going to back up. Twilight Zone was a show from the 50s and 60s, created by Rod Serling, that happened to have generally had a twist at the end of it. Each episode,
Burgess Meredith episode. It's a fantastic example.
I'm a Twilight Zone expert. I spent many New Year's Eves as a kid watching the Twilight Zone marathon, you know, with my brother and with my parents. So I have, and I still do it. Like every New Year's Eve, I watch at least a few episodes of The Twilight Zone just because it's tradition at this point. But the fun fact is, so they made a movie, Ray, of it had four vignettes. Three were based off of old Twilight Zone episodes that they just reworked. Oh. So the famous, you know, thing on the wing with William Shatner, was remade with John Lithgow. And then they had one original vignette, which was John Landis, three people died because he's a fucking asshole. Not worth it. It was also the worst of the four vignettes, but I digress.
Three people died making the movie?
Yeah, they were decapitated by a helicopter. How do you
know these
stories, Ray?
Oh, Christ, Ray.
Are you an android that recently came to life?
That's something a human would definitely say.
This was a huge news story, Ray. Anyway.
A huge news story in what year, Gina? What year was this a huge news story?
I mean, it remains like anytime 88? Max Landis's name is brought up. Everyone is basically like, Max Landis is a fucking asshole. Don't forget his dad killed three people. But anyway, here's the fun fact. Ray, God damn it. We're never going to get through this if you fill all your sacks with things this you don't know. So the fun fact about this is that the vignette in the Twilight Zone movie that was based on the Billy Mummy episode that they're doing in The Simpsons was the live action acting debut of Nancy Cartwright, the voice of Bart. So she had a small part in the Twilight Zone movie of this episode. So it's very fitting. She was like the sister of the kid who has all these powers, basically.
And this movie came out in 1983. So pardon me if first grade Ray didn't hear the story of three people getting decapitated on a movie set.
It's a shame you don't live somewhere where movie trivia is rife. Where people who know about movies talk about movies all the time.
Yeah, and you know, it's not like John Landis ever became famous or did anything else or was constantly talked about as having killed three people, and then his son Max Landis got me too.
I guarantee you're
by friends of ours in the comedy community.
I open guarantee most there first are people dates listening. With, hey, let's talk about John Landis murdering three people during Twilight Zone.
I guarantee there are people at home listening right now that had no idea that was a thing. Maybe didn't even know there was a Twilight Zone movie. And they are going to justify, they're going to bring it up for me on Twitter with hashtag I didn't know either. That's all it is.
Ray is a dumbass. Hashtag Ray is an android or Ray is a dumbass, please.
If you knew hashtag Ray is an android, it's probably appropriate as well.
Here's a fun trivia fact. That Twilight Zone movie scared the shit out of me as a child.
Oh yeah, the mouth is the biggest one. The which one?
The mouth.
Oh,
where Billy Mummy takes that the kid's mouth away.
That was in the movie. That wasn't Billy Mummy. That was in the movie.
Right. The movie is what I'm talking about.
Yeah. That wasn't the original was Billy Mummy. The new one, I forget who the kid was. But that's
Lost in Space, the classic show.
Billy Mummy from the Twilight Zone.
Yeah, I watched Lost in Space. What am I, some sort of monster?
It's a great episode. In the original episode, anytime he sort of freakishly deforms people or animals, they say, send them away to the corn, and he wishes them into the cornfield so the rest of the town don't have to see them. And he actually does, like Bart does to Homer in the original one, he turns a man into a Jack in the Box, and you just see the silhouette on the wall, and it's so well done. And
sounds
this
creepy.
Is so funny. This is so funny that, you know, Bart's a monster. The reason that this is Bart's nightmare is because it ends with him telling Homer he loves him, and he wakes up screaming from the nightmare. That's the nightmarish part for Bart.
Real quick, just want to jump in here with the little boy who plays the Billy Boomy character in a Twilight Zone movie. His name is Jeremy Licht. He did a lot of work in the 80s as like a child actor, I guess. He was on the Valerie TV series. Oh, wow. For 110 episodes.
Oh. That kid never needs to work again.
And basically did not work after 1993, except for a short called The Closer in 2009, where he played 40-ounce drinking hooligan number 2, which could well be some other guy named Jeremy Licht who got their IMDb mixed up with his, because that doesn't make any goddamn sense.
Yeah, he had a friend. You know, he had a friend who does comedy and asked him to do a thing. Like, I could totally see that.
There's a great detail in this episode where everyone's eating cereal at the kitchen table when Bart comes in, and they're terrified of him, and they spit their cereal out. And on the cereal box, it says it's like a crusty cereal or whatever, and it says it's something like that, but it's like the chocolate version. And the slogan is only sugar has more sugar. And it's so great because I had to pause it to read, and I guarantee it's one of those things that like no one probably noticed, but they still did it anyway. And I love it.
See, I just laugh when, cause Homer, you got to know better. I don't care if you got $50 of the game or not. When the monster brain power kid comes in, you let him watch Krusty the Clown. You don't tell him to shut up so you can watch the end of your game. I mean, that's a party foul. But the part that did make me laugh was when he turns the ball into Homer's like limp body or whatever it was. Yeah. And it just hits the upright. And I'm dying. I'm like, that's so wrong. It's so right.
And the football goes, and anytime anything like this happens, you know what we say? It's good that Bart did that.
That's right. Oh, that was real funny. Also, so anyway, that's the
also
Bart
his
episode.
Test at school was great. Who was the first president? Some guy. Country is called Bonerland.
Yeah.
And then like the next three questions are like, when did the Civil War start and end and all that? And it was like, eat my and shorts. Like, like all those. Visual
and the comment
so
from the
great.
Teacher says, "And so we'll be adjusting the history books again to accommodate Bart's answers."
Yeah, it's all great. And then he wakes up screaming because the therapist says, "You know, your kid's a monster, but you should spend time with him and love him, and maybe he'll be less of a monster." And then so he and Homer and Bart bond, and then Bart wakes up screaming.
That's
it's funny.
That's greatness.
Yeah, and then we're on to Homer's nightmare, which is a Frankenstein parody.
It starts as a Frankenstein parody,
it's
and
fine.
Then gets to the famed Rosie Grier Albert Finney movie, The Man with Two Heads.
Yes, it's I will say the weakest of the three. Still, I mean, that being said, it's like a slightly dry turkey sandwich that you got for free from a monkey spot. I'm still gonna eat it and enjoy it.
I mean,
Homer
did not
finish that sandwich. We need to take note of that.
That's true. Which there's an episode where he eats a sandwich that has gone bad for like weeks. So he absolutely would have finished that turkey sandwich no matter what.
The gist of this Homer episode is Homer's fired for sleeping on the job because he's going to be replaced by a work robot, which ends up falling on him and killing him. He gets a job as a gravedigger, falls asleep in the ditch.
That's not what
Isn't
happens.
That right?
No,
this is what happens when I don't take diligent notes, Gina.
No, it's Homer gets fired. He gets a job as a ditch digger, but he takes a nap in one of the open graves.
Excuse me.
And he gets killed there. Mr. Burns and Smithers think he's dead, so they use his brain to put into the robot. Smithers warns Mr. Burns Homer was not a good employee, but Mr. Burns doesn't care.
You know what my notes here basically said.
Robot.
they killed Homer and put it in the robot, and I took that as he got killed by the robot. I'm thinking of Mr. Burns at the end of the episode who gets crushed by the robot.
Yes.
Yes.
There we go. I just conflated two events, guys. It happens. No, hashtag whoopsie.
I love the bit where they're dragging Homer out of the graveyard in a bag, and he's like, oh, and Smith's like, I don't think he's dead yet. And then Burns comes over and just starts whacking the shit out of him with the shovel. Like,
oh my
bad
God.
Corpse. Stop scaring Smithers.
Yeah, it's great. And then when they're scooping, apparently when Mr. Burns says, hand me the ice cream scoop, to scoop his brains out, there's a great line when Smithers says an ice cream scoop and he goes, damn it, Smithers, it's not rocket science, it's brain surgery.
Brain surgery. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, these are all pretty strong. So the Homer's brain goes in the robot and he eats a lot of donuts. And so they decide to just take the brain back out because he's not really doing the job he's meant to be doing. Which, you know, yeah, this helps. Smithers is crushed, but this leads us to. And it leads
Burns
us to the man
Ray.
With two heads.
Burns is crushed. For yeah, that's God's fine. Sakes, man. You get any of it right, well, any part of it.
So the thing that kills me is that you're led to believe, at least I was, that they were going to cut out a Smithers' brain and either put it in the robot or put it in Homer. And instead, they just cut off his whole head Burns. And attach it to Homer's body because that's funnier.
Burns.
Mr. Burns, what is, are you?
Why? What am I saying?
Now he's trolling us. Now he's trolling us.
I mean, yes, but what have I been saying? Homer?
You keep saying Smithers instead of Mr. Burns.
Oh, Smithers, Mr. Burns are the same person. We already know that. You know why? It's because I want to do the like one bit. Yes, it's like Fight
is
Club.
Is this some Fight Club shit?
The thing I want to say is the one bit I really enjoyed in this is Smithers trying to talk Mr. Burns out of using Homer's brain in the robot. He's just like, he's not a good employee. And immediately Mr. Burns like does the thing where he looks at Smithers and sees this great Smithers brain. And immediately Smithers is like, but you can do whatever you want, of course, obviously. And that made me laugh. I like that bit.
Yeah. And it ends with, so Homer, you know, he has Smithers's head attached to him. They all wake up from their candy nightmares and you think it's over, but then Homer looks into the mirror and realizes that Mr. Burns's head is on his shoulder. And then they do this great bit at the end where it's like, and next week on this, and then it's a very typical sitcom trope where Homer is sitting there with Burns's head sewed to his thing and Lisa says, "Oh, you have to come to my thing tonight." And Smithers goes, or Burns says, "No, we have to do this." And Homer goes, "Oh, I hate having two heads." Laugh track, laugh track, laugh track.
Well, it was great because, you know, they were also making fun of the sitcom bit where everything ends the way it begins, no matter what. And so they were just like, next week's episode, nothing changed. And I laughed about that, especially in 91. That's a really strong bit. So, okay, we're going to take a quick commercial break and we'll be right back to talk about Treehouse of Horror number 6.
G.I. Joe will return after these messages.
Hey, this is Keith. Or some actor playing Keith, I'm not really sure anymore. But we're coming to the end of my Los Angeles con spree. But before I leave, I have some scores to settle and discover a couple truths to be revealed. It's all going to come down to the season finale of Rideshare Episode X. It's going to drop on December 3rd. Now, until then, I want you to catch up by binge listening the first season. And I suggest that you do exactly as I say. Or you're going to miss all the fun.
Hey, it's Brent Pope, the host of Breakfast with Brent Pope. You've seen me on some of your favorite TV shows saying things like, "Give it up, Jimmy. You got to sink this putt to win." On Breakfast with Brent Pope, I sit down with guests from the entertainment world and we do it all over breakfast. Or should I say Breakfast? Every week on Breakfast, you get inside Hollywood info and tips, great breakfast recs and booty debates. Most of all, you get the most delightful 30 minutes of your week. So dig in. It's breakfast time. Listen at breakfast.com, Apple Podcasts, or wherever fine podcasts are found.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Come on.
Okay, everybody, say cheeseburger.
Cheeseburger!
Speaking of cheeseburgers, let's go to Burger King.
Look out, nature dudes, we're coming.
Burger King's taking Homer, Marge, and all the Simpsons camping, including you-know-who. Now you can get one Simpsons character and camping scene in every Kids Club meal at Burger King.
The Burger King Kids Club, just for fun,
just for you.
Now, back to G.I. Joe.
And we are back talking about Treehouse of Horror number 6. Opens with a headless horseman and some hangings. Whee!
Yeah, this was my pick, and I don't even know if this is my if this is my most favorite, because there are other ones that I also like a lot. I really love the one where Willie, I think it's Treehouse of Horror 5 or maybe 4, where Willie keeps trying to save the day and just keeps getting an axe to the back. In every vignette. That's a great one. I picked this one, though, specifically because the first episode that they have, which is called Attack of the 50-Foot Eyesores, it so reminds me of what we should be doing to Trump that I had to watch it because it just has a great moral at the end that makes me wish that we could have Paul Anka come in and sing a song and no one would pay attention to Trump. And then he would just die.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it works until the Nazis are in the street setting you on fire.
Whoa,
that's
dark.
Where the problems start coming in.
It's a metaphor, Ray. It's a metaphor. Yeah.
But this is by far the Treehouse of Horror that my brother and I quote to each other the best. And a lot of them are from this first one. So the first one, Attack of the 50-Foot Eyesores, is Homer goes to get a donut. He thinks it's going to be a giant donut, but it's a little tiny one. So he goes back and steals the giant donut from
Lard Lad.
The Lard Lad mascot, yeah. Holding it.
Real quick, how many of you, show of hands, have bought that huge ass donut from Universal Studios Simpsons?
I have not.
I have not. No, I have not either. Should.
Am I the only one with a hand up? What's wrong with you people?
No,
come on.
You know what? I'm not. I know I can't eat that much donut.
It's not about
eating
the donut.
Eat that much donut. That's the problem.
It's about taking a picture for Instagram.
It's for the gram. Come on now.
I mean, I've gone there and I love it. I love searching for Bort license plates. But I just know I would want to eat the whole donut, and then I wouldn't. When I go to theme parks, I very rigorously plan out my eating schedule so that I can eat maximum amounts of things, and that donut would wreck me for the rest of the day.
Well, that's why you get it last.
Oh, that's
true.
How are you going to finish it if you get it last?
You're not supposed to finish it. That's the thing. It's too big to finish.
Take it home. Come on, man. Share it with the family.
But there are so many. I'm just gonna fly through some of these one-liners that my brother and I quote. So Marge comes downstairs to see Homer drinking a beer with a clearly pantyhose on his head, like he's clearly just pulled a caper, and he's laying on the giant donut. And she goes, "Where did you get that giant donut?" And he goes, "Well, I acquired it legally. You can be sure of that." And his delivery is amazing. And then so all of the ads and mascots in town come to life during an electrical storm and start wrecking the town. And there's like three Pet Boys-esque guys Pet that Boys, have giant heads. And the old man who owns it is like, "Fellas, where you going? Don't go scratching up them heads." And it's just...
Because they have giant heads, and so when they jump down, their heads are far too large for their tiny bodies.
Yeah.
And so all their heads have to be dragged around the ground. It was a good
bit.
And
then later on, you see them in the background. They've now got shopping carts that their heads are in that they're pushing their heads around, which
right.
is a great
a good bit.
Background bit. And then there's a part where Chief Wiggum sees a giant monster, shoots it. Turns out it was just a guy on the basketball team, a very tall guy.
It wasn't even a giant monster. It was just a tall man. It wasn't like a 50-foot anything. It was just like a 6-foot
guy. Tall
basketball
player. And the other cop goes, "Oh, chief, he was just a basketball player." And he goes, "Ah, he was turning into a monster, though."
You can be sure of that.
There's a scene where there's a Satan. I'm not sure what product this is parodying. I know it's something, but. Where there's a devil walking around, and there's a great bit where Bart is on his shoulder convincing him to do bad stuff, but he's just convincing him on both shoulders to do bad stuff instead of a devil and an angel on his shoulder. Great bit.
I like that the lard lad shows up at Homer's house for the donut back, and he's just like, and Homer's like, "Oh, you want the donut?"
This is my favorite line.
And then Marge's like, "Give him the donut." He's like, "No."
No, this is
which just
this
killed
is,
me. What's the line,
My
though?
Favorite line is he knocks on the door. Homer says, "Oh, Flanders has your giant donut. Go bug him." And then when the door closes, Homer goes, "He came to life. Good for him." And again, the delivery is so perfect. My brother and I say this to each other probably at least once a month. Like, we'll say something and then good for him. And it's always that. And then at some point, you know, Lard Lad wants his donut back. He realizes Flanders doesn't have it. And Homer does not want to give him the donut back. Marge says, give him the donut back. It like it'll finally end all this horror. And Homer goes, "Well, if it'll end horror." And then immediately after, he gives him the donut back. And then Lard Lad starts smashing everything. And Homer goes to Marge, "Don't you ever get tired of being wrong all the time?" And she just goes, "Sometimes."
Yeah, that was a great bit because you're led to believe if you give Lard Lad back the donut, he'll everything will stop, and then it just keeps going as if nothing happened.
And it's just some of the greatest voice acting I've ever heard, because on paper those are all funny lines, but hearing these people read them, it's just, I remember the first time my brother and I watched it and we lost our shit at all those, and all of those are packed into like an 8-minute vignette. Everything that I just read is basically the episode.
Yeah. Well, then we go to an ad agency that created the statues, and then they get Paul Anka to write a jingle that just says, "Don't look at them." People don't look at them, and they all die.
This is a little interesting thing is that the Simpsons in an earlier episode referenced Paul Anka, said something about him being cool, and he wrote them a letter to say, "Hey, you guys referenced me. That's so nice. Thank you so much, The Simpsons." And they were like, Do you want to be on the show? And he was like, "Yeah, I would." That's so they wrote this specifically for him. It's a great jingle, and I want to sing it anytime Trump is on TV. And it's basically just to stop those monsters. 1, 2, 3. There's something guaranteed, you know, and it goes into just don't look. And everyone turns away from the monsters to watch Paul Anka singing, and so the monsters lose all their power and die. And I am telling you, this is what we need to do. This is what we need to not pay any attention to Trump's tweets or his TV appearances or his insane press conferences, and he will starve to death like these monsters and fall over dead in the street.
I mean, I think it'll be a lot easier when he's, you know, not the most powerful person in the world. Probably easier.
Yeah, he's out of office. He's going to launch nuclear weapons if you do that.
Yeah.
I'll show you who's not going to pay attention to me.
Yeah, it's fine when he's hiding out in like a bunker or whatever, because there's a people that look different than him out in the street walking around. That's fine. I don't care about rage tweeting then. Then he can be safely ignored because it won't affect my life at all. I'm just saying.
I mean, I think it would work. I think he would lose his. I think that's the only thing keeping him alive now is
Gina,
attention.
Don't you ever get tired of being wrong?
Sometimes.
Oh Lord. Okay, so the second episode is our Nightmare on Elm Street episode.
Nightmare on Evergreen Terrace. This one is actually kind of scary. Like as far as Treehouse of Horrors go, which. You know, err more towards comedy and less towards scary. This one was actually considered one of the scarier ones.
Yeah,
and again,
I can see that.
It has my brother and I, you know, there's a line in this that we quote all the time. And it's, you know, basically groundskeeper Willie is haunting kids in their dreams and killing them a la Freddy Krueger because the parents let him burn to death one day at a school meeting. And there's a great, Marge says, it was the 13th hour of the 13th day of the 13th month. We were there to discuss the misprinted calendars. And yep. then Homer says, lousy smarch weather, because it's very cold. And growing up in New Jersey, whenever there was a snowstorm or a rainstorm, my friends and I would say, lousy smarch weather. And it's just such an amazing opening as she's telling this horrible story about a man burning to death.
So the thing the kids at home need to learn, so people that are younger than us, see, now we have things called memes. Before we had memes and ways to communicate like that, we just spoke in Simpsons references. That's it. That was the only meme, yeah. Simpsons references in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yep.
Also, since we're not going to be on it, I just want to say that my favorite groundskeeper Willie line of all time is from the Treehouse of Horror that is the Shining.
Yep,
that's
the one where
parody.
He dies in every episode.
Shut up, you want to get sued? Oh, God. Dead.
Yeah.
Dead, I am dead.
Yeah, that probably would have been my second choice for one to pick, because that is also great. Maybe next year. Maybe next year we'll do that one.
I feel like early on the parodies were great because they had they just used the structure, but then they just packed so many jokes in. Mm-hmm. And when we get to Ray's episode, their parody was like, "Oh, you're doing the thing, but there's no fucking jokes."
Yeah, I mean, I will admit that, you know, I have a big gap after probably like season 10 of The Simpsons, so I can't speak to. Like, I do know that the Treehouse of Horrors are consistently the most watched episode because people just love them. So maybe the quality is still good. And I didn't mind season 25. But yeah, comparing it to these. But, you know, that being said, it's got to be hard to like eventually.
No, I'm not going to say like you fucking Simpsons people are like hacks. Like they've been doing it for 31 years.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, it's just the only thing is just that like. You're pumping out things that are fine.
Yeah,
they're fine.
Yeah,
there's nothing wrong with them.
It was fine,
but like these early things are inspired, and I think they still hold up. I haven't talked to a child yet to see if they think these things are funny.
Oh,
I tried.
So we got this Nightmare on Elm Street episode with Willie.
But you have to show him all the Nightmare on Elm Streets first, so he gets.
I did.
It.
Good idea. Yeah. I'll just pump those through him. It'll be fine. I did show him my treehouse. And then I watched Treehouse 25, and he was looking at his phone the entire time. So
looking at his phone, he has a phone.
We have an old iPhone that doesn't have any cell; it just has Wi-Fi, and he's just got like YouTube Kids on there, whatever. So he was just watching fucking toy unboxings and shit like that.
That makes me so sad.
Whale videos. Like we give him, like let him choose what he wants at certain times when he has the phone.
Yeah,
and it is what it is. The kid's got terrible taste.
Yeah, but this is they do. You're right. They basically do a straight parody of Nightmare on Elm Street. Freddy Krueger got burned and then tried to kill kids in their sleep. And this is that's exactly what they do here. They just pack it into 8 minutes. And there's another great line where you know. The kids' parents explain to them why Groundskeeper Willie is trying to kill them. And then at some point, one of them says, the next time you fall asleep, you could die. And Grandpa Simpson goes, ha, welcome to my world.
Yep.
And it's so sad and funny.
I appreciate the part that Willie's menacing Bart in his dream. And Bart goes through all the trouble of creating quicksand in a sandbox by just pulling out mud and covering it in like grass. And then Willie falls in. It's like, oh, that's it. No, he's the most horrific spider monster now you'll ever consider in a cartoon. Outside of Wicked City, I've never seen a scarier spider monster.
And Maggie saves the day by plugging up his bagpipe hole with her pacifier. And you think that's going to be the end of it. And the most brilliant part of this is that as someone who in high school watched every single, I used to host horror movie marathons at my place over numbers of days. And we did every single Nightmare on Elm Street, every single Halloween, every single, just of a bunch of different horror movies. And they always end with you think he's beaten, but at the last second, something indicates that either he's not and he'll be back in the next movie, or he's just straight up not and he just kills the person who's the hero. And so you know that he has to come back. And so Lisa says, I don't know, I can't shake this feeling that Willie is going to come back in some way. And then he just gets off the bus, is a normal guy again, and is trying to scare them by just being like, ooh, blah, 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 blah. And the bus drives away and he goes, no, I left my gun on the bus. So he was just going to shoot them. And then it's him running down the street after the bus. And it's so brilliant because it really plays on those, that trope great, that the horror movie monster comes back one last time for the kill.
Yeah, and he also loses a shoe trying to chase the bus, and then it's just sad. And yeah. It's like, oh, I feel bad for Willie. That's kind of weird. Okay, so the third one we got is a Homer. It's a Homer episode.
Homer Cubed. Did you not wait, Ray? Serious question. Did you not understand that the title of this was Homer Cubed?
No, here's the deal. I wrote the word Homer, and then I put a 3 like by cubed, but it ended up getting a line through it on my notes from the previous episode ending, so I completely lost it. I'm like, why does it say Homer's? I don't understand why I would write that, but now that you say that, yeah, it's Homer 3.
Okay, I thought for a second that you didn't understand.
When in doubt, assume that he does not understand, and you will be right most of the time.
You'll be right a lot. Oh. Yeah, that's a fact. Patty and Selma are coming over, so Homer wants to hide from them. He can't hide in the closet because Bart and Lisa are already there. So he finds a mystery wall and pops through and ends up in a 3D dimension.
Yeah, so this is very cool. It's also 100% based on a Twilight Zone episode. A little girl goes through a wall. This is exactly what happens. Someone has to tie a rope around themselves and go in. So even sort of lesser known episodes of the Twilight Zone, they parody. But this is a straight up parody of that. But this was like the first time they used this sort of technology to do computer graphics of The Simpsons. And it took them a long time to sort of figure out how to render them. And you know, there's a great line where Homer is standing there and Fox notoriously was never supportive of The Simpsons, even when it was their number one show. The executives are fucking terrible. They always make fun of like TV executives, especially in Treehouse of Horrors. And there's a line where Homer is just standing there and there's this, you know, for the time, beautifully rendered computer graphic world behind him. And he goes, ooh, I feel like just standing here is costing so much money. And then he just stands there silently for several seconds. So he goes, good. Better make the most of it. And then he just burps. And it's the greatest, like, fuck you to Fox. Because apparently the ending of this, they basically said, like, okay, we need him in the Homer in the real world. And then we want a crane shot and we need to block off traffic. And Fox said, nah, fuck that. Do it cheap. We're not giving you that money. Despite the fact that this was a $1 billion with the merch and everything. Yeah. They were making them so much money. And literally, they were
Simpsons
so
created an entire night of programming for this network.
Yeah. And they were so bummed that they couldn't get the shot that they wanted. And even in the last scene, you can see cars driving by because they weren't allowed to block off the street. They weren't allowed to get the shot that they wanted. They went back to Fox multiple times. And again, this is season 7. This is Treehouse of Horror 6, season 7. By this point, you know, maybe they didn't know that it was going to run for 8 million more seasons, but it still had made them so much money. And they just Fox is just notoriously terrible and just was like, no, we don't like the fact that you spent money on this one section. We hate it and you're stupid. So you can't get this one last shot that you want. But the computer world is very cool. There's real mathematical equations in the background that I didn't understand when I read the Wikipedia entry. And I'm not Ray. I'm smart. So you know that they're real and they're good.
They looked real to me, but, you know, so does a clothesline. What do I know?
But you know, Bart tries to go into this other dimension and rescue Homer. It doesn't work. Homer gets sucked in to our world. So he's walking around in our world. And then my favorite part, he's very scared, but he sees an erotic cake shop and goes in.
Yes. And then the episode just ends. It ends with a close-up of the erotic cake shop.
Yeah, Homer is now in our world, which I think about often. I think, what if this was real? What if I was just walking down the street and all of a sudden there was this? Because there's people in the shot that are looking at him like, what the fuck is this computer-generated fat man doing in our world?
That's what I wonder, how they shot that. Did they just put somebody like an actual, like one of those green suits? Or did they put somebody in like a Homer Simpson outfit and just run down the street like a crazy person? Because I'm sure those were actors, but they seemed perplexed by what was happening around them.
Yeah, it's just such a weird, great episode that ends in the weirdest, greatest way. Of it's a kid's show, and he goes into an erotic cake shop after a parody of a pretty obscure Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah. Hold on. Are you saying that an erotic cake shop is not a good place to get child's cakes? Because if so, I've got to cancel an order for Egon's birthday.
Erotic,
you
got to
be real careful
monster.
Saying things like that, say that, Chan, because you're going to get QAnon folks all up your ass.
You are a Democrat liberal.
I am part of the deep state.
It's fair. So let's talk about maybe the best Treehouse of Horrors, episode 25, Treehouse 25, the one I picked because the thumbnail looked interesting.
I hate you so much.
I appreciated the Battle of the Network Stars intro, where they started listing off a whole list of celebrities, pull the curtain back, and it's just all their dead bodies to spell out like Treehouse of Horror or whatever the heck it
was.
Yeah,
so this is the only appearance in this episode of Kang and Kodos. They're the hosts sort of this variety show. And then they're not in the rest of the episode, which is sad, but also in keeping with Ray's terrible pick.
Thank you. Yeah. I did a great job. This first one I actually liked a lot. Bart Simpson's in class. He is locked into his classroom because he's in detention, and he finds an Aramaic desk, which, it's basically a gateway to hell. And so he enrolls in hell school while he's there, where he's like the best student because of course he is. And Lisa's very popular there because of why not? And the whole thing is just fun. And they used a Wilhelm scream in there as well. Chan, I don't suppose you have that queued up, but like we got a Wilhelm scream.
I think that they maybe do that in every episode. But there's also great backgrounds, like they're torturing people, and in the background of the scene where they're sort of panning through hell, there's a guy being tortured by being forced to eat donut after donut after donut, which is a reference to another Treehouse of Horror where Homer is being tortured in hell that same way. So I do like the consistency. There's also a great line. Bart's a good student because he's great at thinking of creative ways to torture people. And his teacher's a very attractive blonde demon. And he says, yes. I can't believe it. I have a crush on my teacher. And she goes, down here, we can make that happen. And that's a very great line.
Very funny.
I mean, here's the thing. We can make that happen here, too. So,
Yeah, that's true. But, I just love the fact that they're in hell. And so it's like, yeah, of course, teachers fuck students in hell.
Yeah, why wouldn't they? Come on.
But
teachers fuck students in hell.
I will say that my what I noticed about this is that the writing to me weren't trying as hard as the earlier Treehouse of Horrors to pack as many verbal jokes in. But animation-wise, because they can do so much more nowadays with animation, the backgrounds and the visual gags are really packed in there with this. So that was one of the things that I noticed. Writing, not as good, but, just the nature of being able to turn animation over faster now, I think that they really packed shit into the background.
I'm glad you said that, because there's something I noticed in the first two that was not prevalent in the third one, is the pace is a lot faster. They have more they're trying to get in, so everybody's talking a heck of a lot faster just to try to get all the bits in as quickly as possible. Whereas the one episode 25, it's much more slowed down. They don't have as much to say. They don't have as many jokes they're trying to cram in there. So they kind of take their time at a more leisurely pace. So in that way, it was a little bit more comfortable to watch because you didn't have to be constantly focused. You know, you could be
wait,
able to
you're
bit
talking
more
about in 25?
Yeah, in 25 yeah. it was more lackadaisical.
I disagree. I felt like the first ones had a better narrative flow, and then this one was just sort of like they came up with a concept, and
oh,
like
you're 100%
that
right.
was sort of it.
No, he's just talking about pace. Just like
I'm there
about
the
are
pacing
more
of the episode
per minute.
Yeah.
The thing I noticed about this one was, and I made a note of it here.
Keep your pants on, Marge. It's probably some private school that costs $1 million a year. And then they squeeze you for extra money through book fairs and silent auctions. And parents get 20 emails a day from the school. And everyone hits reply all to everything.
You know what that is? That is some fucking old men who are complaining about having to do shit for their kids' school. Their kids' private school, mind you. Yeah. These aren't like young men who have an axe to grind and want to like tear down the system with their satire.
Yes.
It's just old, comfortable men are like, ugh, I got to go to a PTA meeting again.
Yeah.
What do I pay these fucking schools for if it's not to like babysit my kid?
This...
And that just like kind of left a bad taste in my
yes.
mouth.
Yes. And I will say that this 100% reminded me so much of someone who I will tell you afterwards, but it is very much sort of one of those sort of like wealthy old white men who tells stories like this. Remind me, I'll tell you guys after.
Yeah.
Guys, I'm right here.
And if you're on Patreon, we're not going to tell you in Patreon either, but
yeah, no.
But yeah, I had the same thought. The same exact thought where I was like, oh, this is like what happens when writers get older and richer and they're shooting the shit before work starts and saying like, oh God, like nowadays it's just they want you to be so involved at this and that.
Well, I just, you know, I only appreciated the fact that they put in a New York Yankees are evil joke. That made me laugh. That brought me joy. Anytime you give me a good sports joke, I'm here for it. And the final part of this episode is the final exam. Bart has to torture Homer with like a sledgehammer, and he's like, I can't torture Homer. And Homer's like, I'm so proud of you, son. Do it for me. And so he just destroys him. And then cut to like graduation, and Homer's sitting next to another guy who's just a pile of parts, and he's like, your son did it too, huh? Which one's yours? And it just made me laugh. That's just like, let's play this bit out and see how far it goes. And I appreciated that as well.
Yeah. This wasn't bad.
Yeah.
I will say watching this immediately after the prime of the Simpsons, the prime years of the Simpsons, probably didn't do it any favors.
Well, you know what? I think that 3D Homer episode didn't quite hit me as well as the other five before it did. So it was a nice palate cleanser to lead me into that one.
I do remember watching that one live too. And like, I remember there were like commercials and shit about like how amazing it was going to be. And yeah, I guess it was pretty amazing for
yeah,
the time.
Yeah, it was pretty freaking dope. I mean, I think I agree that nowadays we're like, oh, they do this for every, like they do computer, but at the time it was holy shit. I remember them talking about they didn't know how to animate Bart's hair and they had to use like a plastic doll as a model of like what does his hair actually look like. But yeah, like this was, if this had been the first episode that I watched, it probably would have been like, man, that's pretty good. That's pretty funny. But just having, you know, it coming off of two of the best ones, I was just like, okay, this is, yeah. All right. This is good.
Yeah. It's fine.
Yeah. I will say this next one is my least favorite.
I don't know. This one,
Yellow?
I feel like it had a lot of potential.
Weakest.
And then they just didn't do anything with it. Clockwork Yellow, where Mo, the bartender, is the Malcolm McDowell character from Clockwork Orange. And all they basically did was tell the story, but like half the time, instead of that character, the Malcolm McDowell character, just became the Homer character. And then they just sort of spun it off. And it was not great. I mean, look, it's a love letter to the films of Kubrick. And because they do a whole lot of references at the end, there's so many in a row that there's actually a Barry Lyndon joke. And I think somebody even says, like, I don't even know which movie this is. And that made me laugh.
Yeah. That's sort of like what there was no, to me, there was no nuance to it. Like, whereas the earlier Treehouse of Horrors would pay homage to something. This was literally just, you know, it starts with, okay, yeah, what if Mo is, you know, is in a Clockwork Orange. Okay.
Leader
fine.
Of the Dreams. No, here we go. This is what if Dane Cook wrote The Simpsons. Here's a reference.
Yes.
Here's another reference. That's funny, right?
It sort of reminded me of them trying to keep up with Family Guy or something, because there were references with no nuance. And I love Family Guy, but that's sort of what it is. There's no, it's just let's reference something, because then it's, you know, Mo after he's retired from the gang gets beaten up by a new gang, and then he gets the old gang back together, and the first thing they do is home invasion, and he goes to home and it's an Eyes Wide Shut orgy party,
right?
Which again, there's no commentary on it. It's literally just they show up and it's an Eyes Wide Shut orgy party, and you're like, okay, this is another Kubrick reference. And then they start fighting everyone at the orgy party. There's a pretty good bit where it's like, oh, people who are censoring nudity, remember to keep up. Yeah. Okay, that's pretty funny. And then at some point he opens a door and the guy from Full Metal Jacket is sitting there with his rifle. Yeah. And then he slowly shuts the door. And like, that's it. That's the Full Metal Jacket reference. There's no, it's like they're not trying to work it into anything.
The one bit I think they did get kind of right is the bit where they play, what is it, the William Tell Overture in Clockwork Orange, when Malcolm McDowell he takes like two ladies back to his room, and then it's like a fast motion of him like sexing them up and then relaxing and then doing more, and it goes on like it's a long scene, but it all happens in fast motion while it happens underneath. So they did this with Homer and Marge as if it's going to be this big like sex scene, but all it is Homer just like drinking beer and eating pizza and ordering more takeout while Marge gets increasingly bored on the bed waiting for any action to happen. And that one hit me a little bit right. That to me was pretty funny.
you saw yourself in that.
I feel it. Yeah.
And then they have a 2001 A Space Odyssey reference, which again, it's fine, but there's no nuance to it.
They repeat it even.
Yeah.
He throws the bone and then later on he throws the pen and like,
yeah, yeah. It's very strange. And then, you know, the ending is pretty funny. It's Kubrick watching this episode and saying, throw it out and recut it, which it's like, it's fun, but it does feel like a bunch of writers said to a bunch of artists, oh, just draw a scene from every Kubrick movie you can think of without actually figuring out ways to weave it into the storyline. Like, for instance, The Shining parody, where it was, oh, the Shinnin, do you want to get sued? Don't read my mind between these hours because that's Willie's time. You know, like it's like one of those drum machines wrote a song, basically. All the moves are there, but there's no soul.
Hey, you leave Roland out of this. There's no need to start shit.
We got the last one is what the others. And I actually enjoyed this one a heck of a lot.
Yeah, because this was probably my favorite.
Yeah, I was a fan of The Simpsons on the Tracy Ullman show. Obviously that's where they came from. And then, so when they had that first Christmas Simpsons special, my entire family watched it. We were very excited for it to come out. And when we found out The Simpsons was going to like be a thing on TV, we were like, well, it should be. This show was brilliant. And that Christmas special was great. If I was to watch it again now, maybe it wouldn't be so great, but I remember
it's
it
okay.
Very, very.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's still pretty good for it what it up. Is.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's also, I appreciate this too, because I remember watching The Others in college and being like, holy shit, this movie is good. And it's one of those like underappreciated horror movie gems that is actually quite good and quite scary. So I appreciate that they sort of parodied this movie that I don't think anyone's really clamoring for. but yeah, I appreciated this. I also, just from you know, someone who has worked with a lot of voiceover artists, it's fascinating to listen to the same actors do the early voices versus what the voices became. Yeah. Because Nancy Cartwright's Bart was in like a much lower register when he first started, and then he got higher as he went on. They make a joke about it, but the original Homer, I forgot, was real grumpy. Like he became more of a buffoon as it went on. But even in like first season Simpsons, he's more kind of like pissed off. And
remember
and
the
grumpy.
Bit was he strangles Bart all the time. Like that was the bit.
Oh yeah. I mean that lasted many seasons, but he was sort of more like a put upon Archie Bunker type. He was sort of more like world weary. And then later on, he just became a lovable buffoon. But it was really fascinating to hear the voice actors act opposite themselves. Like Dan Castellaneta doing now Homer versus then Homer was just really interesting.
Because if I remember right from interviews, Dan Castellaneta said he just basically was doing a Walter Matthau impression and just maybe like slowing it down slightly. I forget exactly, but it was, it's a completely different voice than what Homer has now. And we're all better for it, I will say. But it is fun because they do the whole bit where all the dead old first, you know, pre-season Simpsons from the Tracy Ullman show show up to their nowadays house and they all have interactions. And Homer faces the dilemma. Do I want to go with my current wife, Marge, who's a little bit more bitter, or do I want to go with young, fresh Marge from the first cast, who is a rearing sex bot ready to go? And he's just like, I think I'm going to go ahead and take the younger model. And they all have an agreement because older Marge has seen all the shit that Homer's done and is still with him anyway. And he's like, you know what? That's a great point.
Yeah. And Marge ends up killing herself because she's like, oh, you like ghosts, huh? And I will say again, in the Treehouse of Horror lore, there is a bit, I can't remember which one it is, but the camera at some point pans underneath the Simpsons house and you see the bones of the original characters. Of the original Simpsons characters. Like you see them dead. So this is in keeping with the lore that the originals were at some point killed or died and are buried under the house, and now they're haunting it, because that other thing happened in a much earlier Treehouse of Horror. And just the idea, because they even mentioned this on the Wikipedia page, but the idea that they can keep all of this in their heads, that this will be a great little Easter egg because remember this episode, blah 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 blah, when you've got 8,000 episodes of a show, is insane to me. I mean, as someone who frequently rewatches my favorite shows and discovers new things each time, if I tried to keep a bunch of little things or Easter eggs in my head, I would probably go insane.
I would say go ahead.
You're not going insane. The poor writer's assistants that they probably pay slave wages to are going insane.
I just want to say, my favorite bit, the one that actually made me laugh the most of all three of these, was in this last part of this episode because it was so goddamn dark. And it's where Bart and Lisa are in the tree and they're trying to jump out the window to kill themselves because all the Simpsons are dying to become ghosts so they can hang out with the other ghosts. And the Bart and Lisa kill each other by jumping out the window. And they land and Willie's there and he picks up Bart and Lisa and is like, I've got more meat for my stew. And he's got Maggie over his shoulder. And like Bart or Lisa's ghost says, like, wait a minute, when did Maggie die? And Willie just turns. He's like,
eh. There's going. A close up on his shifty eyes. I love that. I very much appreciated that.
I'm not even kidding.
That he just committed infanticide for no reason other than to put her in a stew. But also that, and then the ending to this I loved because, first of all, I don't know if you caught it, but so basically the ending is they're all dead. They're all now ghosts living in the same house. And Lisa has a moment, as Lisa is wont to do, where she says, wait a minute, if there's two different versions of us existing, theoretically, couldn't there be infinite versions of us existing?
Multiverse,
and then, of course, there's, you know, people burst in through the door and it's different versions of them done in different animation styles. So there's Adventure Time Simpsons, there's South Park Simpsons, there's Archer Simpsons.
Lego and Minions.
Yeah, Minions. And then also in the background, there's other versions from other Treehouse of Horrors. Like there's Marge after she was cursed by a gypsy. And so she's all blue hair. I don't know if anyone caught those, all these sort of like little Easter eggs. But my favorite part of this is that the first alternate version Homer that bursts through the door is voiced by the only actor to appear in every Pixar film, John Ratzenberger.
Damn it. I heard the voice. I was like, wait, who is it? And then the gagster kept coming. I was like, ah, crap, I'll look it up later. And then I forgot.
It's such a weird, like there was a time when Treehouse of Horror got James Earl Jones and they used him in every Treehouse, like every vignette for that year, because when you've got James Earl Jones, you've got James Earl Jones and you're going to use him. So he's like, you know, he's an alternate universe version of Maggie where she goes, this is indeed a disturbing universe. And he's just like a bunch of different voices. And I think he did a couple, he did a couple of them. But the fact that they had John Ratzenberger record one line in the last 30 seconds of Treehouse of Horror 25 is so bonkers to me and such a weird little Easter egg. Like you would think they would have used him for the other vignettes, but I guess they didn't want to spoil that little weird surprise. I mean, and who knows how many people did not pick up on that because he has one sentence.
Look, John Ratzenberger is not a huge get. He's a great guy and a fantastic actor and has got a great legacy. It's not like he's he's not James Earl Jones.
Okay, first of all, like I agree that he, you know, that maybe people who see him wouldn't immediately know him. But I just looked up his net worth. He's worth $80 million. He was on Cheers. He was on Cheers.
What's Gina's net worth?
Well, he got Cheers for 10 years.
Yeah. Like he was on Cheers for 10 years. And by the last season of Cheers, those actors were getting paid so much money. And also, again, he's the only actor to appear in every Pixar film. So his voiceover rate is probably astronomical. There's no way he did this for a discounted rate because it's The Simpsons.
Why would he? He wouldn't have to. So Chan, what's Gina worth? You were just aghast.
I did look it up, and what I got to this My Life reputation profile has been removed by Gina Ippolito. So apparently, she's going around. And however, the little Google thing, summary says that she's worth greater than $499,999.
That's probably accurate. Yeah.
I did recently get a bunch of my profiles removed from things because they had my address up. So I recently just emailed like five different places to opt out because they had been posting my address. You guys probably have your addresses up somewhere too because it's just something that you have to opt out of. And one of them was My Life.
People will stop by. Like I'm bored. Come on, Gina.
Hold on. I just found. Your middle name's Marie?
Michelle. Marie is a different. There's a different.
Because it says that you're 50 here. I'm like, wait a minute. Is Gina 50?
No. There are a lot of Gina Marie Ippolitos. It's a very common. I just saw that too, where it said greater than 499,000, which I guess if you own a house, I guess that's what your net worth then becomes. Like
you guys,
part of the house.
What do you think my net worth is? I just looked it up.
Two bits.
Raised a Canis net, and before I was done, it autofilled it for me. People are looking this up. This is good knowledge. Raised net worth. Now it references. Let's see. Some YouTube and independent films I made back in 2008, 2009. Ooh. And Common Beauties, the web series I did with Brent Pope in 2016. What do you think my net worth is according to networthpost.org?
I just looked it up,
so I can't.
Okay. I have not, I was almost going to type it, but then I wanted to guess, but I'm going to go with the same logic of because you own a house, I'm going to say let's see, but you own it with another person. I'm going to say $400,000.
$700,000. I'm probably worth more dead than alive. Guys, I don't. It must be all the podcasting.
How are you worth more than me?
Sorry, Dina.
Here's the real talk. If you look up my name, net worth, it doesn't show up at all.
Yeah, I know.
It's like he's got a Twitter.
But there is an interview with Robert Toshi Chan.
Nope, not me.
What about
different Robert Chan?
What about top 20 richest actors in the world? Oh no, that's Robert De Niro. How are you? I admire your lack of footprint online.
He just has Here's a really common name, Gina. I mean, it's not that
trying to build a footprint online. So what you're saying right now is incredibly insulting to me.
No, I spend a lot of time trying to get people to take shit down so that I don't get stalked.
I have scrubbed my name from zero websites. Never have I done that. I want to put as much of myself out there as possible. And the fact that nobody cares about my net worth is disheartening.
Oh, this is just amazing. Anyway, all right, guys, so that's our Treehouse of Horror episode, somehow surprisingly ending on net worth. We do have something else we've got to add here because we have some theme song throwdown that we have to do.
It's the theme song throwdown. This is the final match in round one of our tournament.
Get it.
What? We did it. We've gone through 32 songs, or this will be 32. 34, because we did that one play-in. The next round, we're giving it over entirely to patrons of the show. I'm going to be calling them individually and playing the songs for them. After that, we're going to have like a loser play-in round. We're going to do a final thing. There's going to be a lot more audience interaction with these last ones. We're not going to have entire control over it. This is the last round where we are making the votes on these. So,
what?
Yeah, it's crazy. It is bonkers. And let's kick it off with the song that the last of the top seed songs. I made the top seeds of songs that we personally chose. So they're always going to be kind of hard. You know, like we're obviously going to vote for our favorite songs. So I didn't want to skew things too much. This is the song that I chose that I love dearly. It was like one of the first huge cartoons of my childhood. And the song just kicks so much ass. It's Star Blazers.
Outer space, we're leaving Mother Earth to save the human race. Our Star Blazers, searching for a distant star, heading off to Iskandar, leaving all we love behind. Who knows what dangers we'll find? We must be strong and brave. Our home we've got to save. If we don't, in just 1 year, Mother Earth will disappear. Fighting with the Gamelons, we won't stop until we've won. Then we'll return, and when we arrive, the Earth will survive with our Star Blazers.
Yeah, that's... that's a real strong theme song. Look, it's got the kind of this Imperial Starship Troopers kind of like all the good parts about fascism are in that song.
Yeah,
hurtfully
but
correctly put. Yeah, that men's chorus. It's just like, ugh, yes, I want to save the motherfucking Earth.
You know,
yes!
I get shades of, you know, because there's something that really stirs inside of me. And I think it's because I'm an old white dude. But a men's choir, like especially when they're kind of doing deep singing, deep, you know, low singing, really like kind of gets me going. I think a little bit of Skyrim. When you play Skyrim and you get near the dragon glyphs and all of a sudden you kind of start getting that men's choir that gets louder as you get closer to the glyph. And it's just like, hoss. Hoss, and I'm just like, oh my god, I'm getting it. Yes, take me away. And I'm into it, man. It's just, it's real, real strong. Star Blaze, look, I said this the last round about Cowboy Bebop. It's going to take a real strong number to beat it. I think it's going to take something real strong to beat Star Blazers, as far as I'm thinking. Gina, where are you at with this song?
Yeah, I've never heard it before, but it was pretty rocking. I might not have the same connection to it as Chan did, because I don't. Like I said, I've never heard it, and I don't know of that show. But that being said, you know, like, for the first time hearing it, I was rocking out.
This one is going to be real out of left field. So this is not going to be two monsters going at it. It's going to be something like, if this tickles your fancy in a real strange way, Star Blazers might go down. It was brought to us by Patreon subscriber Jason McClain.
Jason. Oh, one of my favorite people.
It's from the Croft Super Show, and it's Electro Woman and Dyna Girl.
Wow.
Okay, here's what I'm going to do. Wow. Right now, what I'm going to do, I am going to send you this link, because I need you to watch this and watch the and see the visuals as well, because I think it's got it's got a real throwback BBC live action, you know, like fourth Doctor. Doctor Who action. Mm-hmm.
I just watched the video that Chan just sent me, and it is a very 1966 Adam West Batman feeling kind of a show. Bright colors, wide camera angles, you know, bad film quality because it's old. But I'll tell you, I really enjoyed it. It reminded me a little bit of a 1970s creative porno.
Yeah, it had a very, you know, Wonder Woman-y feel to it. I dug it, but I'm going to call shenanigans because it's not a cartoon.
It's not a cartoon, Chan.
I gave it some leeway because we did what's that Alice in Wonderland thing one time with like Taylor Horsey.
Yeah,
I was like, you know what? I'm going to allow some stuff.
Yeah. I feel like in my tournaments though, I adhere to rules. The rules of the everyday podcast are different then, but if you're going to start opening this up to every campy theme song, whether or not it's a cartoon, I call shenanigans.
You know, I think that's a very fair point that Gina is making. That being said, it came from a patron. So I say let it roll.
I'm calling shenanigans.
We're gonna open the next tournament up to live action kid stuff, I think. So if you wanna bring that hardcore electric company action, it's gonna happen.
Might happen.
Make it happen.
Okay. Well, Gina, where are you at here? Where are you at between these two songs?
I mean, I gotta go with in my heart the one that followed the rules. Which was
wait. Tell me what you thought of the song without without knowing that it was live action.
I probably would have voted for it without knowing that it was live action. But I don't. Every other song that we've done is a cartoon. You can't throw live action in with cartoons unless that was the rule from the beginning. So I can't vote for it.
Wow. It's called a theme song throwdown, not a cartoon theme
it's
song
not,
throwdown.
It's the I first mean, one. If it was open to everything, then I think we would have had different suggestions and we would have gotten different things. And I just don't think it's fair to compare live action to cartoons when we're this many rounds in, is what I'm going to say.
Well, this is the last matchup of round one, and it's the only time it happened. So I really, just because Gina said that, I want to be contrary and vote for it.
Yeah, go for it.
Because what you're asking me to pick from is between 1970s style funk, lady front forward funk, or a men's chorus in that sort of like deep Latin, not like Roman roots.
No,
like, not
here like Latin I'm asking you to choose between the candidate that followed the rules and the candidate that's claiming that they're going to drain the swamp and is not playing by any rules. So choose wisely, Ray, because this will make me understand some things about you.
Thankfully, now, when I choose Star Blazers here, and I'm going to choose Star Blazers here, the cool thing is, when I choose it, I can say it's because it followed the rules and not because I'm a misogynist prick. So at least I have that going for me. I'm going to go with Star Blazers. Chan, I jumped the gun, but I assume that's where you're going as well.
It is. Although, honestly, you know what? No, fuck it. Fuck it. If you both are voting for Star Blazers, I'm voting for Electra Woman and Diner Girl. Because you know what?
Okay. You just throw your vote away, third party voter.
The rules have
changed my vote. We're doing Electric Diner Girl. Beat Star. I've tricked you. Nope. Now we've got the win.
It's not a legitimate. That's like writing in Kanye West. It is not a legitimate choice.
Kanye West was on my ballot.
Yeah, he was on my ballot too. Fuck him.
So that's not a write-in. That is legit.
No, but he was a write-in in some states, though.
He wasn't on. Write-in.
Yeah, he wasn't on every ballot. But fuck him.
That's fair. You know what? Fuck Kanye West. I'm voting for Star Blazers. That's my logic.
Star Blazers moves on, but honestly, I may just put Electra Woman and Diner Girl into the losers bracket to torment Gina some more.
I think it belongs to upset Gina.
Burn your house down.
You know what? Let's put it against Looper the Third.
Oh my God.
In the bracket and just see what happens.
Oh my God.
You told me this was supposed to be fun.
It's the ultimate terrible Gina conundrum.
It was it's the fuck, marry, kill, only without the kill. And it's like Hitler and Pol Pot. Which one do you want to have sex with? Which one do you want to marry?
I'm going to put on my finest suit and then come kill both of y'all instead of myself.
Ray, Gina's at the front door. She's wearing a suit. Run! Wasn't that exciting theme song? Oh, man. Yeah, this is going to be a real long episode, guys. Enjoy it. Just put it on Halloween itself and just all night long. That's how long this episode is going to be going on for.
That much longer than other episodes.
It's not that. To be fair, this is about half the length I expected it to be. So, yeah, you're 100% correct, Gina. We learned some interesting things about net worth.
Yeah. I learned some interesting things about Robert Toshi Chan.
Oh, my gosh. All right. So guys, that's our show. Chan, Gina, do you have anything you want to add? Anything you want to plug?
No.
No.
No, you never do. Guys, listen to Who Would Win. It's a pretty good show. Hashtag Who Would Win, at Who Would Win Show on Twitter. Otherwise, you can hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com/KnowingIsHalfThePodcast. Or patreon.com/knowingishalfthepodcast. We just recorded, and it's going to be live in the feed at Vault at some point. Well, we had on, 11 of our patrons to judge the loser's bracket. We will not say who won. That will be left a surprise. But we had a really good blast recording it over this last weekend. And my goodness, guys, I think it's a very enjoyable show to listen to as well. So check that out if you are one of our patrons. By the time you hear this, it should hopefully be in the vault. Fingers crossed on that. Otherwise, you can hit us up on Twitter at G.I. Joe Podcast. But individually, I am at Almighty Ray.
At 999 RPMs.
I'm at Gina Ippy.
And that is our Treehouse of Horror Spectacular. If you really liked it, we'll do it again next year. And I'll even get a more ambiguous episode from late in its Simpsons run. Huh? We'll be right back.
Hey, you. No, 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 no. Don't look over here. Keep your eyes on the road. Got something for you. Take a listen to this.
In the newest Pokemon, they have Score Bunny, which is a starter.
What?
Yes.
Score Bunny?
So it's a fire bunny that plays soccer. He kicks balls.
He scores. Great.
Score, like Scorch, I think. Yeah. Oh, I get it. Like goal. Like Score Bunny.
Rad.
There's Score Bunny, who uses his mad soccer skills to steal, I think, like donuts or something like that.
How does he use his soccer skills to steal donuts?
He kicks it.
Oh, yummy.
The best part is, though, Score Bunny wants to go and follow Ash and go on big adventures. But
oh my
Ash
god,
is like,
Ash is still the main character of the anime?
Yes, where have you been? Yeah, so Ash is like, I'm getting on the train. I'm leaving, Score Bunny. And Score Bunny's like,
is it because he's 80 years old? That's why he sounds like that? Nothing makes donuts taste better than a foot coming in contact with them.
If you like what you heard and love co-op with your friends, check out Gaming Together, a cooperative podcast. That's Gaming Together, a cooperative podcast.